This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For many of us, blogging is a part of daily life, while many others have never read a blog, much less written one. Today, we're going to try to help bridge that gap. We'll hear from expert practitioners about what to read, how to start blogging, and maybe even more daunting, how to keep it up. Over the past year, bloggers tweeted, tumbled, and rickrolled, so we'll work our way through some terminology as well. And we want to hear from novices and experts with questions about what it is, how to do it, and ideas about what works and what doesn't. Since most of what we talk about is news and politics, let's focus there. Is there a blog you'd like to suggest? Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Later in the hour, we'll hear stories about the day 50 years ago when the old regime collapsed in Cuba and Fidel Castro's revolution took power. But first, blogging. And we begin in New York with Retz Sorgatz, who blogs at Femoculus.com and also contributes to Wired magazine. He joins us from the studios of the Radio Foundation in New York City. Nice to have you on the program today. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you too.
And I know that a year ago you had a resolution to cut down the number of sites you visited every day.
Yeah, I swore to myself that this time last year that there would be less new sources in my feed reader, and I ended the year with at least 100 additional ones.
So it was a
resolution meant to be broken.
Meant to be broken. And how is the blogosphere different today than it was a year ago?
Well, I mean, I think a few things happened. Certainly the election changed a lot of the way we perceive and consume news again. The big site this year, I think, in that area was something called 538.com, and that's spelled out, not the numerals. And it was this guy named Nate Silver who basically all he did was look at all of the polls out there, aggregated them into simple predictions, and was really, really miraculous in predicting the outcome of the election down to, like, in some cases, like a number of votes.
Really?
And so that was pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. We were somewhat less successful on our map here at npr.org.
Yeah, he was really interesting. He took a new model at it, and usually what polls do is they look at a snapshot in time and say, at this moment, here is what the populace would how the populace would vote. And what he did is he said he's going to try to predict what the populace will do come November. And this small tweaking of the model ended up, showing trends instead of that and kind of predicting things. And it was a really interesting kind of sight to watch all through the election season.
How do you find the time to keep up with all of these sites? You list the 30 most notable blogs of 2008. Do you check in on them every single day?
Yeah, I'm one of those people who's a little bit too compulsive. I have a feed reader that has about probably 600 or 700 sites in it. And even, I'm on the cab on the way here, I'm checking it. I'm always deleting things from it, always scanning it. And it's not a lifestyle that I recommend to anyone by any means.
But you are among those who make a living blogging?
Yeah, I don't actually run ads or anything on my site, but I'm one of those people that's always online and do things online all the time. And so I kind of work in internet media, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me that among the 30 most notable blogs of 2008 that you list, at number 30, well, you'd think old media, the New York Times blog.
Yeah, the New York Times really introduced a bunch of new things this year. And they've been doing it for several years. Some of the ones over the years that have been really great include City Room, which is all about New York itself, and Freakonomics, which is about interesting economic discoveries. But this year they really introduced some more fringe and niche kind of blogs. They launched one called Laugh Lines, which was about writing about comedy, and one that was really interesting called Proof, that was about drinking and alcohol and the culture around drinking and alcohol. And it was some people who, some recovering alcoholics, some people who loved to celebrate alcohol. And it was a really interesting thing to see pop up on the New York Times.
Interesting that a couple of our favorites on this program, Ta-Nehisi Coates and Anna Marie Cox, also made your list.
Yeah, Ta-Nehisi was really great this year. He wrote a story about Bill Cosby and race that I thought was really great. And Anna Marie, who has been around for a long time, she was the original Wonkette, she she had a job at Radar Magazine and got fired. And this year, after that, she had a spot on the McCain Trail, and she no longer had anyone to report for it. So what she did instead was, in the place of not having a check anymore, she did a pledge drive to get people to, you know, leave $5, $10, whatever, or up to $100, I think. And she raised, I think it was $6,000 just from people saying, yeah, we want to continue to have you on the trail following McCain and writing about him. Yeah. And it worked pretty well.
Michael Yon does a similar kind of thing with when he covers Afghanistan and Iraq as a blogger and lives by contributions.
Yeah, I think that was kind of the first example. And it was really interesting to see. And I think that we're going to for sure see more of those. In fact, I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen several more take off. But I think oftentimes what happens is that they make a little bit of money at first and then people stop contributing after a while. How NPR continues to do it, I'm not sure.
We're not telling either. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org if you have questions about starting to blog, about your favorite blog sites. We're talking with Rex Sorgatz at finoculus.com. And let's start with M. M's calling us from Des Moines.
Hi, how are you? I just wanted to call and make sure that some mention was made of Jorn Barger's excellent robot wisdom blog, which was considered the world's first blog. And in fact, Mr. Barger is said to have invented the word blog. He was last spotted, allegedly, in San Francisco, homeless, holding a sign saying, invented the word blog and didn't make a dime from it.
Rex Sorgatz?
Yeah, that's a true story. Yeah, that's a great call out. He really is old school, truly old school. And he was really one of the first people, I remember being around that time. There was probably like 100 of us or so that had blogs, and he was the infamous, famous one. And he did indeed mysteriously disappear for a while, and people were really worried about him. But he's popped back up, and he is back blogging again, and it's called Robot Wisdom. It's pretty great.
Em, thanks for the call out.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Joining us now, also from New York, novelist, screenwriter, actor, and sometimes comic book author and blogger John Ridley, founding editor of the blog That Minority Thing. He also blogs for NPR and The Huffington Post. And John, nice to have you back on the program. Happy New Year's.
Happy New Year to you as well, Neil. Thank you for having me.
And I've got to ask, with all those blogs, where do you find the time?
I have to tell you, it's really hard, because once I've finished one, I really have to start another one. You know, and they're different. NPR is a little more than a blog. It's really like an article. And as you know, there's a very high standard. They started a web program, or really tried to enhance the NPR.org website. And they asked me to blog because I do a lot of commentary for Morning Edition. But they have a high journalistic standard there. So it's a little bit different than just sort of writing what you want. But I think that's what people expect from NPR, is to mm-hmm. have some kind of accountability. And that's fine. Huffington Post, a little bit more of the Wild West, where it a lot of opinion, a lot of thought, a lot of people really expressing themselves, a truer form of the blog, I guess. And certainly Arianna Huffington and what she's done there has been pretty amazing over the last about two and a half years or so. And then that Minority Thing, that's a whole other thing, because we started that over the last year, and that's really me being much more of an editor and allowing people to write and to express themselves, typically disenfranchised minorities, gays, lesbians, Asian Americans, things like that. And really one of the blessings and curse of the media meltdown is that there are a lot of really quality writers who have recently lost their jobs that you can hire and have them freelance. And so one of the things in 2009, we're just going to start doing more original reporting, and slightly going old school, but really an opportunity to hire some talented people who unfortunately don't have outlets anymore.
When you talk about the differences between, say, Huffington Post and NPR.org, you say it's more the Wild West on Huffington Post. Does that mean you're just writing, shooting from the hip, so to speak?
I think so. Now, certainly there are hired editors on Huffington Post as well, who write articles that I think are vetted and quality journalism. I think there certainly is a lot more opinion on Huffington Post, and there are people shooting from the hip. That's not to say that some of the things that are written on the regular blog aren't well-researched or very intelligent opinion, but it certainly is more, here's how I feel and here's what I'm putting out there, where at NPR, I've had things that have been shot down for reasons, either intellectually it didn't fit in, or they were a little skeptical of some of the facts or things like that, which, you know, is good tough journalism. I've never, and I don't say this in a disparaging way about Huffington Post, but never had a problem with people saying, well, gosh, this intellectually doesn't fit in with where we are right now. It's more they encourage you to take a shot, take a chance, and really say what you feel at that moment. Whether it's positive or negative later on, that's a whole other aspect.
Let's get Joseph on the line. Joseph calling from San Antonio.
Yes. What are like the business fundamentals for starting out a blog? I've started a couple of blogs that I've linked to some YouTube sites. Beyond, I guess, Google AdSense and buying some ad credits, how do you start making money on blogs?
Rex Sorgat, any help here?
I wish I knew. There's only a handful of people out there that I would say are making legitimate full-time careers out of it. And then there's hundreds of thousands of people who make very, very small incremental careers out of it, oftentimes a supplementary kind of income. There isn't really a magic bullet yet for a business model. Google Ads is, and its kind of related products around it, are really the most popular ways to make money right now. But you'll be disappointed to see when your little $50 per month check comes in and it's not feeding the kids or anything.
John Ridley, any advice from you?
I think Rex makes a terrific point. I think a lot of people think that, you know, I'm going to be the next Arianna Huffington, or I'm going to have a site that just everyone's going to come to. It's going to be YouTube. I think you have to be realistic. When I went into that minority thing, I did the business model first and realized there's no money to be made there. It's going to be a fairly significant out-of-pocket expense to set it up, do the web design. Now we're hiring writers and things like that. But fortunately, I'm making money in other areas. I can spend that money. I think it really is a labor of love. And something else Rex said earlier, the amount of time that he spends going through these blogs, it's not just the money, it's the time. How much time are you going to spend blogging? How much time are you going to spend looking at the responses, editing those, putting them up? If you're blogging once a month, good luck getting people in. If you're blogging a couple of times a day, you give a reason for people to return and take a look at your site, which is how you end up making any kind of money at all.
We're talking with John Ridley and Rex Sorgatz about blogging. Joseph, thanks very much for the call. And we'll take more of your calls about how to do it, where to go, and what's interesting about it. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Trying to navigate today's blogosphere can be overwhelming, so we're trying to point you to some of the better blogs to follow. We're also talking about how to blog, if that's your goal. Our guests are Rex Sorgatz, a blogger at Famoculus.com, and John Ridley, founding editor of the website That Minority Thing, who also blogs for NPR. If you're a blogger, give us a call. Tell us why you do it. If you have questions about it, you can call too. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And John Ridley, let me ask you, I mean, there's a sense from people, maybe older people for the most part, that, you know, this train has left the station and they don't know how to catch up. They don't even know how to speak the language.
I think for some older people, it's like everything else. When a new generation of technology ideas comes along, they feel like, oh, we're never going to get on board. We're never going to be able to do this. But it's surprisingly easy. There are a lot of prepackaged web tools that you can use or find to start blogs with. I mean, simple ones like with Apple computers and whatnot, also WordPress. To start a blog is really not that difficult. It's maintaining it and getting it out there. And I think it's about being realistic about what you want to do. If you want to communicate with people, I mean, the simplest ways are, you know, Facebook and MySpace type pages where you can talk to your friends or a few like-minded people and gather a community. If you do want more, if you do want to grab for a brass ring, and not necessarily financially, but in terms of reaching a larger audience, there are certainly other ways to do it, but you've got to, again, be realistic. How much money do you want to spend, and how much time do you want to spend to try to build up this community? And over time, I mean, I've read a statistic, there's something like 50,000 blogs that are started worldwide every day. And if that's anywhere near being true, think about the noise that you have to filter through to find your audience.
Here's an email from Prue Baird. I'm not sure who that is. Most blogs for baby boomers are as cluttered as a 1980s Filofax, but there's one, 50isthenew.com, as in 50 is the new 30, which is like reading a Nora Ephron book, one delicious chapter at a time, twice a week, a respite, a conversation, a check-in with fellow boomer women discussing everything from reinventing ourselves to in late life, no, it's not midlife, to having sex after menopause, to facing the inevitable breast cancer, empty nests, death. I don't know, Rex Sorgatz, is that one you check in on?
No, I haven't heard of that one. It was probably one of the 50,000 that came out that day that I didn't see. And that is definitely a problem, that with all of those new sites coming out, even if 1% of them are necessary for you, that's still overwhelmingly too much to consume in a day. But, you know, the point is great that there's niches emerging, and if there's, you know, blogs for elderly women or whatever it may be, they're definitely out there. There's definitely an audience of like-minded people in that category who will start reading you, and you'll read them, and you'll end up finding a community out there.
Rex, I'm going to give you an opportunity to dig your way out of that one by suggesting that 50 is elderly.
Oops.
Let's get another caller on the line. Andy is with us from San Antonio.
Yes, I was wondering how they saw the possibility of combining a blog with either a political or a philanthropic cause is a way to get some money?
A movement, if you will.
Well, yeah. For example, if you aligned yourself with one of the charities and wanted to blog for them and get more people involved and bring more people's attention to the good works that they do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Rex, any advice for Andy?
Yeah. Because there's not much money coming in for individuals, charities are going to have even a harder time this year. However, there were a few things that emerged online that were interesting. There's a site called Kiva, K-I-V-A, that handles micro payments for charities. So there's this whole movement that's emerging online right now for giving really small amounts. And you also saw it, of course, during the election with people,
sure,
especially donating to Obama, that those little small incremental payments really did create a massive change and in many ways like became more important than the $10,000 contributions. And so there are little sites out there that are like, you can use those tools and put them on your site, and then you can kind of get credit for having generated audience, and you can see how much people have contributed via your site.
And how about combining a blog with something like Twitter, where you could use the Twitter to bring people into your blog?
And Twitter is a way of broadcasting messages 140 characters or less to people's emails or cell phones. But, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Twitter's great. It made my list of most notable things, and it's actually came out in 2006, but it's been growing so quickly this past year. And it's really – if you want to get into blogging, it's probably the best place to start because it's so unbelievably simple. You have a little box and it asks the question, what are you doing right now? And you type into it, you hit enter, and it just appears. And there's really not much more to it than that. And you can use you can have your Twitter feed, that is the things that you tweet, appear on your blog if you're using WordPress or some other blogging platform. You can have them automatically fed onto it, in addition to having your own Twitter page. But yeah, Twitter's great. And it was, you know, people are using it as a news source this year. People are nowadays, like, it seems like every news event, there's someone who is live there, live tweeting it. And it's becoming its own new form of blogging unto itself, really.
Andy, thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Let's go now to Graham in Norman, Oklahoma.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, I'm a student at the University of Oklahoma, and I write for several publications that often don't have their own website. And so I created a blog just to put my stuff, music reviews and interviews and things like that, online, so that when I'm interested in a job, I can just simply email someone with a link, and it's got pictures and it looks nice. And I've linked it through my MySpace and my Facebook, and it's actually helped me get a couple jobs, one in Chicago and another one down in Texas, and so it's a really helpful resource.
So not just a means of self-expression, but a means of a career expression too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't even update it that much, really. I just put stuff up there as I write, and it's like I said, it's gotten me a couple jobs.
Yeah. When you go to try to work out a definition of the word blog, Rex, from reading some of the stuff you've written and John too, this is something that people reinvent every single day. There is no single kind of blog.
Yeah, I mean, I use it really liberally nowadays. I used to be, you know, a strict grammarian about what blog meant, and nowadays it's so flexible and used so differently by so many different people. And I think that we, at some point, we were frowning upon that, but now it's like, you know what, if you want to type into a box and you want people to hear about it, we'll call it a blog. That's fine. And there's a new kind of blog that emerged this year, or at least really took off this year, called the Tumblr, which is really, it's a T-U-M-B-L-R. And it's really, it's a little bit like Twitter, but it has a lot more to do with finding pictures online and putting them on your site and finding, just posting up music clips. And this has this concept called reblogging, which is you follow other people and then you reblog. That is, you see something that they have on their site and you put it onto your site. And it creates this weird kind of cut and paste kind of look to it. And it's got its, you know, it's got its own niche and its own community, but it's also like a lot like Twitter in the sense that it's really easy to use and it's kind of flourished its own microcosm.
Here's an email from from Linda in Berkeley. I've heard about fiction blogs. I'm interested in pursuing one as a means of self-publishing. Can you comment, give advice? John Ridley, any thoughts there?
I off the top of my head, I don't know of any fiction blogs. I certainly think in terms of writing and putting things out there, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I think one of the good ideas is having some kind of a hook, having some reason for people to go to you and find you. There was one, I guess like Rex is saying, maybe this is a broad definition of blog, but Stuff That White People Like, which was a very simple idea. You know, some people have read it, said it's overly simplistic, but it, because it's simple and because it had a hook, I mean, look, the guy who ran it has got a book deal. They're trying to make a movie out of it and things like that. So the idea of doing something where you're self-publishing, certainly it's much less expensive and much easier to do than try to come to New York and find a book agent and get a book deal. And by the way, the book business, like every other media business, is hurting very much. So again, though, I think you have to be realistic. If you're going to do it because you want to express yourself and because you want to share this with your friends and perhaps bring some people in, that's fantastic. If you think that you're going to end up with the next Stuff That White People Like or Hot Ghetto Mess or things like that, you know, be careful and just be realistic about where you think you can go with all that. But by God, you know, I mean, certainly, if you enjoy it, do it. It's great.
Here's another email. This is from Emily in Oklahoma City. Regarding blogging, I think the most important thing is to write content that's useful and relevant to your readers. It's much easier and very tempting to just write about yourself and what you're doing, and some of that is okay. But what keeps readers coming back is content that is useful to them. And John, that raises the question of how do you keep that up?
Well, listen, with that minority thing, I've hired a staff. I mean, I could not do all of that by myself. Again, writing for NPR and writing for Huffington Post, that's me sitting down and writing, and I do that daily with NPR, Esquire, Time Magazine, the other places that I write. But the idea of running a website, and we do news, we do entertainment, we do business reporting, we've started doing original writing, as I said, I simply couldn't do it by myself and have any kind of a quality or to be able to update it several times a day. And again, that's why people go back. That's why I think Huffington is so successful, is they've gone to practically 24 hours. A lot of it is just news aggregation and original blogs, but it's a great way to find just a variety of news in one place. So I would agree. I think it's got to be useful information that's different for everybody. What's useful? That's why there's so many blogs out there. But Sure. It's that updating of it that makes it very interesting.
Let's talk with Sister Julie. Sister Julie with us from Chicago.
Hello. Nice to be on the air.
Nice to have you. Go ahead.
I started a blog a couple years ago called anunslife.org, and I wanted to use the blog as a way to reach out to people who have an image of religious life and what it's like to be a nun that's based on movies and various popular media. And I found it was a great way to be able to let people know who we are as nuns and let other nuns speak for themselves about who we are.
And how often do you post?
I post once a day, and a critical part of the blogging is responding to people's comments. I certainly, you know, generate interest on what I write, but I can better respond to people when they let me know what they're interested in, and I can address their questions about God, about being a nun, about Catholicism.
That can present some challenges.
It does. It does. My expertise is certainly limited to, you know, the Catholic tradition and being a nun, but the fact that there is a person, a real-life nun, there to respond to them, even if it's, I'm not sure what the answer is, but I'll find out for you, means the world to people, and it's a real way, I think, to connect with people and encourage people.
Nuns, I know a little bit about the life, but one of the things I do know about it is they are very, very busy people.
We are very busy people, whether we're praying in our cloistered monasteries or we're out on the streets helping the poor and the homeless. We don't have a lot of time sometimes for blogging, but again, it's so important to use the Internet as a way to connect with people and help people.
Sister Julie, thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
We're talking about blogging with John Ridley and Rex Sorgatz. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go to Jay. Jay's with us from Pembroke, Massachusetts.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
It's fascinating. Thank you very much for having this topic. I just wanted to say that, you know, we've had some discussion about money, and money is good, no question. But there are other wonderful reasons to blog. You may have an experience, if you blog, by connecting to other people that utterly changes your perspectives on life or on certain topics. You know, we expect to see communities of like-minded people or oppositely-minded people, but sometimes you get the unexpected. I once blogged about an event in which there was a protest by some Native Americans. I just wrote up a description of it. It led me to a month-long journey and an interaction with literally hundreds of Native Americans from all over the country. It was utterly fascinating.
And it took a month before the thread came undone?
Yes. What happened was there was a powerful impulse, and it went up to like 3,000 reads and stuff like that. But after a month or so, the crowd had kind of moved on. But the crowd might have moved on, but it left me, you know, possessing really a new education and a new perspective on Native American culture. It was probably the most valuable thing that happened to me in 2008.
Jay, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Goodbye.
Happy New Year. Here's a question that came in anonymously. On point, what's the best way to find a blog on one's topic of interest? How does one interact, participate with an existing blog site? Rex Sorgatz?
Google is probably the best answer to all of those questions. And, you know, you could click around and find things pretty easily, whatever topic it may be. But I think it's really true. I think that something that emerged this year, more so than previous years, is that communities really did spring up around blogs more than ever. And something I noticed all over the place is that commenters really, really took control of some sites, and especially like in the political arena, but even not even necessarily just there. But there are certain sites out there that now when you look at them, they'll have like a small post at the top with 100 or 200 words in it. And then you start digging around into the comment thread, you'll find that that oftentimes is 10, 20, 100 times longer than the actual post. And what ends up happening is that sometimes people develop real personalities there and they become regulars there. And sometimes those voices become as important as the blog owner's voice. And it leads to some sort of contradiction sometimes, because sometimes that voice is oppositional, or sometimes it's the same, similar, but it certainly ends up bringing in different kind of perspective and creates kind of a diverse situation. And it's really kind of an interesting development this past year that more and more of those sites become more like a community than a kind of a single authored blog.
What is the place you go to first, Rex Sorgatz, in the morning, other than those places you work for?
I read so many different things. The thing that I'm obsessed with lately is something called The Daily Beast, which was started by Tina Brown, who had a long storied history with publishing. She was at Vanity Fair and such. She started a new site this year, and it's sort of similar to the Huffington Post, but a little bit more toward culture and original writing, and not as much aggregation. But she does a really good job of looking out across the internet and seeing what are people talking about. And that's really the essential quality that she brings, I think. She's really good at identifying buzz.
And John Ridley, I just have a little time left, but I wanted to ask John Ridley where the first place he goes to that is not one of those places that he works for.
Yeah, I would. I want to say I hate to say it, but that's not true. They're really terrific blogs. I go to Apple Insider every morning, first place. and MacRumors.com, just because I got to know what's coming out from Apple. They have three products, but I've got to find out about them every day, what's coming out. I also go to Big Tent at Ad Age, which I think is a terrific blog. It's basically about race, gender, ethnicity in advertising and media and perspectives on that. It's incredibly interesting, things that pass us by every day that we don't really think about that are in front of us in advertising, and very smart writers. That's Big Tent at the Ad Age website.
Well, thanks to you both. Appreciate it. Happy New Year to you both as well.
You too.
Thank you, Neil. Happy New Year.
John Ridley and Rex Sorgatz joined us from the Radio Foundation studios in New York City. Rex Sorgatz, who blogs for Femoculus.com, and John Ridley, who blogs for, among other people, National Public Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about people who had a front seat to history in Cuba. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.